As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Hey, what's happening? This is Vincent. Just here with a quick program note for you guys. Want to let you know before we get started that this week's episode is going to be a two-parter. Not that it's going to extend over 2 weeks. We'll have the second episode out real soon, probably in the next day. But I did want to let you guys know that this is kind of a huge episode. It was a major research lift, and we're really excited about it. And so please stick with it through parts one and two. I think it'll reward you. It's a wild, wild case. And if you're enjoying this at all, since I have you here, could you please write us a review? It would mean so much to me and Joe if you would go onto iTunes or whatever and write us a positive review, give us a good rating. It helps us to grow the audience and to expand the podcast, which is something that's been happening slowly, but been happening. And it's really exciting to be a part of. So, okay, I won't take up any more of your time. Just if you wouldn't mind doing that, I'd be grateful. Now, enjoy the show.
Officially, the cases of the eight women murdered by the Frankfurt slasher have never been solved.
Police reveal that the slasher who killed eight women right here on the streets of Frankfurt was never caught or criminally charged.
They're the faces of victims, eight in all, women who once lived and worked among the vacant buildings and sealed storefronts on Frankfurt Avenue. One by one, they died at the hands of the serial killer known as the Frankfurt slasher. 1985 through 1990, night brought terror to the streets of Frankfurt. The slasher targeting victim after victim. One, in this train yard, sexually assaulted and stabbed 47 times.
I call him a classic serial signature killer because he left his mark on all the bodies.
John Appledorn commanded a special task force of homicide investigators who put together a frightening picture of the slasher and how he worked. Each victim, like 28-year-old Gene Durkin, who was stabbed 74 times, sexually assaulted, and butchered.
Yeah, it was terror. Yeah, absolute terror.
Officially, the eight murder cases remain open and unsolved, leaving many details about these eight brutal attacks forever a mystery.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni, this is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined as always by
Vincent Caldoni.
And, well, we got a little murder mystery for you this week. Mm-hmm. Our last
week
we haven't done
any just straight up true crime at last.
No. Yeah, we really haven't. So it's time to get all true crimey here. Let's talk about it. Well, I guess you found this one. You want to give us a quick intro to the mystery, Vincent?
Yeah. Well, before we get too far into it, I just imagine this. A killer stalks the streets of your neighborhood. He targets women. And the cops are hot on his trail, and soon they have a man in custody. Good, right? Murders don't stop. Not that authorities care. They push on with a trial. They dissemble. They obfuscate. They talk and talk, but they never catch the guy. Now you walk the streets of your town after the sun sets and you wonder, where is he?
walking up behind me, dead in the ground, raising kids and grandkids in the suburbs, holding a dark secret he dare not mention aloud even to himself, sitting next to you on the bus?
And the answers, the truth, well, as the years pass by, they get more and more remote, more intangible. Can he ever really be gone? Or is he immortal in his infamy? And you ask, why didn't they stop him? Why couldn't they stop him? Why aren't they interested in going back and having another look at the story? That's another question I would have if I was living there.
I would say so. So yeah. Without further ado, today we're talking about the Frankfurt Slasher.
Oh, that guy.
But actually, He did some slashing, but he actually did a lot more stabbing.
But this guy was a freaking Jack the Ripper type, though. Seriously.
He really was.
Yeah. We're talking about not just stick a couple of times. No.
He loved him some overkill and some rape. So that's just so you know, this is going to be a gruesome one.
Yeah.
Just a warning. Because this dude, he was truly a walking nightmare.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing, too, is how he managed to get away with it is after doing these crimes, he must have been drenched in blood. Mm-hmm. He managed to mosey on home and not get noticed by anybody. There's a dude all covered in blood. I mean, seriously. But our first question, of course, is Frankfurt. What does that mean, Frankfurt? Okay. This a long time ago it was apparently named after most likely Frankfurt, Germany, because the place used to be populated by Germans. Now it's a neighborhood in northeast Philadelphia. It used to be a town and now it's been absorbed and it's part of the Philadelphia. And actually it looks kind of interesting. I've Google streeted it and so have you. You've done the whole Google Street View thing. I think it's obviously seen better days, you know, but it's still kind of an older town with very narrow streets and 2-3 story buildings and stuff, very urban, not in the heart of Philadelphia, but definitely totally got a gritty urban feel to it. It's more of a poor working class part of Philadelphia, I think. Mm-hmm. And also that's a major hub for rail transit in the area.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
Back in the 70s, some of the scenes in the movie Rocky were filmed in Frankfurt, which is pretty dope.
Yeah, well, it was set in Philly. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it actually makes sense. It's probably a neighborhood Rocky would have lived in, character. Rocky, just like, go back and watch it with an open mind. That movie still slaps to this day. It's really well made, and it's a sweet movie.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes it gets kind of like mocked, Adrian, or like unfairly. It's actually a really good film.
It actually is. I'm old enough to remember actually when that movie was released, and it got great reviews. That was before all the sequels were made, and people then that's when they started making fun of the franchise. Okay, I get that. But the original Rocky, and actually Sylvester Stallone was unknown when this movie came out.
Oh, yeah,
and he didn't barely anything. He not only starred in this movie, he wrote the movie,
wrote and directed it. Yeah,
And so everybody was going like, oh my God, this Sylvester Stallone guy. I mean, this guy is a raging talent. He's like, the new freaking Orson Welles, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, that's no the doubt. Way people were seeing it back in those days. And I gotta say, it's a good movie and he turns in a great performance in the movie.
Yeah. So part of why I bring up Rocky, aside from the film, some scenes there is it kind of gives you sort of the vibe of that neighborhood going into the 1980s.
Pardon our whole film little side thing there.
But if you go back and watch that movie, you will see kind of the seedier side of Philly and of Frankfurt. And it gives you a good visual model for what this would have been looking like by the 1980s. And the area became known for prostitution and drug use.
Yeah.
I mean, the inner cities all across the U.S. weren't doing so great back in the Reagan heyday. It was, white flight and urban decay. But I think Frankfurt got hit hard.
Don't blame Reagan for that. That started well before he took office.
Well before Reagan. That's true.
That started late 60s, early 70s is when all the inner cities really took a nosedive. Yeah. And some of them still haven't recovered. But well, let's talk about murder here for a little bit. Now, you don't want to hear us talk about film and, urban renewal.
We're here to talk about murder.
Yeah. So August 25th, 1985, the body of 52-year-old Helen Patent was found in the maintenance yard by the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority, and also went by the acronym SEPTA. Great acronym. I wouldn't want to have that particular acronym. It just, I don't know, it reminds me of something. I don't know what. But this yard, this rail yard, was at the very end of the Frankfurt line. And that was, I assume we're talking kind of like a subway, you know, people transport kind of line here.
I believe this is actually would be like an interurban.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But it was, yeah, it wasn't a freight line. It was, you know, it transported people. No,
this would be, this would be for, I think, mostly for people. I don't really know if they did any freight, but but it would be like a full-size train, not like a subway or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Helen Patton, body found, she had been violently sexually assaulted, and she had been stabbed 47 times in the chest and the head. And I believe the, besides that, he stabbed her so much in the guts that a lot of her internal organs were visible. This is where we're getting into the Jack the Ripper thing here. I mean, this guy mutilated them. He didn't just stab or slash them. Yeah. And also he posed her, I think posed her dead body in a sexually suggestive way as well.
I have read that. I have read that that is just speculation. Mm-hmm. So he made a mess out of the poor woman. Helen lived with her ex-husband in a town just outside of Philadelphia, and he'd seen her the night before she was killed, but the intervening timeline of her whereabouts get pretty murky at this point.
Mm.
That said, Patton was known to frequent bars in and around Frankfurt. One bar where she was a regular was the Golden Bar. And keep that one in mind because we're going to hear a lot about the Golden Bar. Mm-hmm. It's in Frankfurt, Philadelphia, Frankfurt neighborhood of Philadelphia. The Golden Bar, which was also known as the Goldie or just Goldie's to the locals, was right there on Frankfurt Avenue. It was just a few hundred yards from the maintenance yard. It's the word yard a lot. It was a few hundred meters from the maintenance yard.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a few hundred meters from the maintenance yard where Helen Patton's body was found. And it was a popular hangout for SEPTA workers.
Mm. Okay.
No arrests were made after Patton's murder. No suspect's name. It was barely a news story. I tried to look it up. I couldn't really get anywhere. Kind of an old drunk.
Yeah.
Murder was not very uncommon back in the battle days of Philadelphia. Even though hers was pretty vicious by the standards of the time, it didn't stand out all that much. We don't care that much more about the killings of marginalized people now than we did back then. So it kind of came and went without a lot of commentary.
Yeah, unfortunately, especially in those parts of the town, poor people tend to kill each other a lot, you know, statistically speaking. And so it's just kind of, shrug the shoulders. Oh, well, you know, although you would think it would have attracted a bit more attention from the police just based on the depravity of the crime. It took a few more killings for them to get more interested. So months go by and, just into the new year, January 3rd, 1986, a neighbor asks the building manager to check on Anna Carroll. She was 68 years old, lived alone in an apartment on the second floor of a building in South Philly. And I guess this would be kind of outside of Frankfurt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So he finds her, he goes into the apartment and finds her dead on her bedroom floor. She had been stabbed 6 times, and there was a large hole cut into her belly. Kind of reminiscent of Helen Patton, you know? Exposing the innards, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah, her intestines were on full view.
Ugh, God, yeah, I mean, ugh. A kitchen knife from her knife block in the kitchen was still lodged in her body. So, yeah, the killer did not return it to the knife block. Kind of rude, I don't know, but... and she had, of course, been sexually assaulted before she was stabbed to death. And also, there were no signs of forced entry into the apartment. So, quite possibly, she knew her murderer. Maybe. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, not much is known about Anna Carroll. But the papers at the time reported that she liked to hang out at bars, particularly the Golden Bar in Frankfurt. Hmm. Wow, I'm seeing a connection there. What do you think?
I'm starting to notice a little bit of a connection.
Yeah.
So the killer did the people of Philly a solid. He held off on doing any gruesome murdering for nearly a year.
Nice guy. Yeah.
He then left a little present for the good folks of Frankfurt on Christmas Day of 1986. A neighbor of 74-year-old Susan Olzeff noticed that the door was ajar. He went inside her apartment to check on her, and he found that she had been stabbed to death.
Ew.
Police would later determine that she'd been stabbed 6 times in the back after being brutally raped. Once again, details of this unfortunate woman's life are actually really scant, but the one thing that we do know, Olzeff was a regular at the Golden Bar.
I think I would think it'd be time to stop being a regular at the Golden Bar, personally.
Especially because they were like, if you read the papers, at least at that time, there were a lot of bars up and down the street. Like, you could have got your beer someplace else.
Yeah, just definitely. Yeah, or maybe get out of Frankfurt entirely to do your boozing. I don't know. But let's move on to our next victim here. This was Jean Durkin. And she was a little outside. She was a lot younger than the other one. She was only 28 years old. But she had had issues with mental illness her entire life, unfortunately. So she was homeless, living on the streets of Frankfurt. She typically slept.
It's cold in Philly in the winter, man. That's a hard place to be.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. And so she typically slept on the stoop of an abandoned bakery that was just down the road, like just a few doors down the road from the Golden Bar. Not a great place to be for a woman like her. Yeah. And especially in 1987 with all these murders, women in general were giving that part of Frankfurt a pretty wide berth. But I guess Jean Durkin didn't have a lot of choice in the matter. So she was known, when she got a few extra bucks, known to head on into the Golden Bar. Just on occasion. On January 8th, 1987, this would have been about 2 weeks after Susan Olzeff's I keep mispronouncing it. She's got a weird name.
It's hard.
Olzeff. It is hard. Yeah. Yeah.
Olzeff, I think, is how you should say it. But just for our listeners, it's Olzeff. And that's part of why we're struggling with it.
Yeah. Olzeff. I think. But so this was about 2 weeks after Susan's murder. She was found murdered. Jean Durkin. So her body was partially disrobed, found under a truck behind a fruit and vegetable stand. About a half a mile from where Helen Patton's body had been found in the rail yard, Jean had been sexually assaulted, beaten brutally in the face, and stabbed 74 times. Wow, that's a lot of stick, if you know what I'm saying. Yeah. In this case, it appeared that she did fight back. There were defensive wounds in the body, so the overkill was at least maybe partially a result of that. And not just depravity, I guess, but still, even if she did put up a fight, 74 stabs is kind of a lot. But you know, hopefully, she got a few good punches and kicks in. Hopefully, she at least wounded the guy.
You would hope.
Police, of course, hopefully attended the scene and got blood samples all the way around. But of course, they're not showing any of the evidence to us.
No.
Apparently doesn't look like there's ever will. But, who knows? Maybe he bled a little bit too. I don't know. Yeah, I hope so.
It would be great if they could trace some of that still. I don't know what they have.
Okay. Kind of an awkward spot, but we're going to go to a quick commercial break and we will be right back.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Back after these amazing words from our amazing sponsors. We're back. Let's return to the story of the Frankfurt Slasher in progress as we listen. Yeah, that's how you say that. Frankfurt Slasher. Go.
Another patron of the Golden Bar was found murdered on January 29th, 1987.
This has got to be cutting into their revenue at the bar. I mean, you know, seriously, it's a crisis, don't you think?
Yeah. 29-year-old Catherine Jones' body was found frozen solid in some bushes by a well-trafficked sidewalk. The cold weather likely prevented her discovery. The smell. People were walking right by her. I find that very disturbing.
Yeah. It is.
Unlike other victims, Catherine hadn't been stabbed. Her cause of death was actually strangulation and blunt force trauma to the head. So I think the way that I read that is that she had been beaten unconscious and then choked out.
Yeah.
Since she was strangled and beaten and not stabbed and slashed, the cops were hesitant to say that her murder had any connection to the other four. So, you know, I mean, that's a fair point, but you've got a woman who's struggled with substance abuse like the other victims, drinks in the same bar as the other victims, and knew the last victim.
Yeah.
Possibly even more than that. We don't really know her connection to any of the other victims, but we know that she knew Durkin.
Mm-hmm.
They're about the same age, live in the same neighborhood, is found raped in the murders, and the cops go, I don't see a connection. Our killer always uses a knife. There's no chance that he just got his knife that day or whatever.
Yeah, right.
They ruled it out altogether. I mean, they were just like, this is not connected in any way.
The police actually were insisting all the way along that none of these murders were connected to each other. That seemed to be kind of the official theory, at least at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, especially at the end, that's what they went with. People in Frankfurt, they're not dummies, and they knew what was going on. And despite, at this point, years of police insistence to the contrary, it is there widely accepted that, yeah, that was the slasher.
Yeah, Catherine Jones, that is, just as a reminder.
Catherine Jones's death was the
slasher. Yeah.
Just wasn't feeling slashy that day.
Yeah, you never know maybe he had just left his toad sticker at home, you know, and then this opportunity to murder somebody presented itself. And so he had to improvise, you know, entirely possible. Or maybe it's also possible he thought that he would just, you know, see what it was like to, you know, bludgeon and strangle somebody to death and see if that was as satisfying and fun for him as stabbing them to death. Because here's the deal. I mean, you know, stabbing somebody to death, you're going to get, again, drenched in blood. Whereas if you club them and strangle them, you know, that's a lot cleaner. And that's another possibility, is that maybe he wanted to commit this murder, but for some reason, maybe he had to keep clean, you know, maybe he had to be somewhere, maybe just to establish an alibi or something. And maybe he just couldn't afford to have blood all over him. You know, maybe that's why he didn't use a knife.
But what I would conjecture about this one is these last two murders represent a little bit of a change in MO.
Yeah.
They were both committed outside. And I could see him having maybe a near miss with a witness or even law enforcement in the case of Durkin. And that when he went after Catherine Jones, he didn't want to have to be running home on the streets of Philadelphia covered in blood.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, these three murders actually took place in a very short space of time.
Yeah.
So, there's all kinds of possibilities. Like you said, I mean, maybe the police were out in force. And yeah, like you said, couldn't be covered in blood.
Squad car rolls by on a normal patrol, and he just got lucky that they didn't look too closely at him walking down the street covered in blood.
Finally,
the cop set up, the Philly PD set up a task force to find the killer. They never made any arrests, the task force.
Yeah.
They didn't even really stake out the Golden Bar, from what I can tell. Like, you'd think that they would have had undercovers in there or something.
They might have, you know, because, I mean, typically they're not going to announce to the world about that. Hey, we're going to have a surveillance van out there, you know, or anything like that. They can't do that, you know, so maybe they did. It could have been, too. I mean, I don't know exactly what the culture of the Golden Bar was, but if it was a true neighborhood bar where it was full of regulars and everyone knew each other.
I think that's the case.
Then if a cop shows up undercover, you know, I mean, people are going to see him and notice him and change their behavior. You know, if your killer is hanging in the bar, he's not going to, he's going to notice that there's a cop there. And
at the very least, I would have just parked a squad car across the street.
Yeah, you could do that. I mean, just, you could put a
something,
hide a few cameras there, you know, and get videos, you know, get, you know, video surveillance footage and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And we do know that the staff at the Golden Bar were cooperating with police.
Again, as I said earlier, they were losing revenue, you know. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Losing revenue, getting an even worse reputation than they already had.
Yeah.
So 66-year-old Margaret Vaughn, she had actually been issued an eviction from her apartment, but she hadn't quite moved out yet.
Yeah.
It's about 1 a.m. on November 11th. Two residents in...
And that's 1987. So same year, but the guy took a break. He kills three people, bing, bong, bing, and then takes takes about, I don't know, 10 months off or so. 10, 11 months. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. He took little breaks.
Yeah, he did.
She'd been issued this eviction notice, but she hadn't gone out. She hadn't left the place yet, which is too bad. About 1 a.m., some residents in the building noticed that her door was open, which was not like her. She apparently was kind of a private person. And they opened it to look inside to make sure everything was all right. And sure enough, in the foyer was Margaret Vaughn's body. She had been stabbed 27 times in the torso, neck, and head. Margaret had not been sexually assaulted, but otherwise the scene was very familiar. Once again, there were no signs of a break-in. Or there was no robbery. They believe that wasn't the motive because Margaret had just over $200 on her person when she was found. So,
but she was only stabbed 27 times. So this is obviously not her guy. Okay, that's still excessive. Do you know, by the way, did he do some of the stuff he'd done before where he stabs and rips her guts so much that their, you know, their internal organs are visible? Did he do that with Margaret?
He did that again. He did that other times.
Yeah.
We'll get to one where I know he did that. I don't know if he did that to Margaret, but he may have. Some of this stuff, I don't have very good descriptions of the crime scene. Some of them I was able to find better descriptions of the crime scene. That's just down to it being a 30-something-year-old case at this point.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So Margaret, though, had been a regular at the Golden Bar. And on the night she died.
Yeah.
On the night she died, she was at a bar, not the Golden Bar, though. One that was nearby, literally down the block. It was also on Frankfort Avenue. A bartender saw her talking to a man. And this bartender described him as a middle-aged white dude. He was stocky. He wore glasses. And he had a distinctive round head and face shape.
So George from Seinfeld then.
Yeah. We'll put up that. He walked with a limp. So this description led to a composite. So you can look at it. And yeah, actually, Jason Alexander might be a good candidate to play him in a.
Definitely.
David Fincher film. So yeah, it they circulated this, but it never really led to any arrests. It's not the best composite sketch I've ever seen, but he is distinctive.
Well, I don't know. You look at it. I've seen the pictures, the drawings myself. He could be a lot of guys.
True.
Yeah, a lot of 30-ish guys who are kind of overweight. And but there is the limp. Did you mention the limp yet? Guy had the limp.
He's got the limp. Remember this limp. This limp factors in.
Teresa Schiottino, 30 years old. She did not drink at the Golden Bar. However, she did hang out at other bars on Frankfort Avenue. And like the other victims, she was a white woman. She was a working class native of Philadelphia and had a history of problems with both alcoholism and mental illness. It's kind of funny. Those things go hand in hand, kind of like alcohol and tobacco and firearms.
Stuff like that.
On the afternoon of Thursday, January 19th, 1989, she was drinking at the Jolly Post Tavern. Again, right down the street from the Golden Bar. Left the bar by herself at around 6:30 p.m. A few hours later, she is found dead in her apartment, which was just three blocks from Margaret Vaughn's apartment. You remember Margaret Vaughn? She was a previous victim. So Teresa had been stabbed in the face, neck, and arms at least 25 times. And also, I don't know if this is connected or not, a 3.5-foot-long piece of wood was found in her apartment, which did not seem to belong there. There's no particular reason why that wood should have been there. It wasn't part of a piece of furniture, but when they did the autopsy, it became clear that she had been sexually assaulted with that piece of lumber. So, I'm not going to ask specifically what was done with that piece of wood. So,
I don't really need to. It was probably pretty brutal.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So, again, the Frankfurt task force swung into action and interviewed patrons and bartenders at the bars along Frankfort Avenue. And one bartender remembered seeing Teresa talking to a man a day or two before she was killed. So he was a white guy, had a round head, wore glasses, walked with a limp. Sound familiar? Sounds like the guy. Yeah. And so a new composite drawing was made. And so they were hot in the trail of this distinctive guy.
But
there was a break, though.
Yeah, for 15 months, there were no murders.
Yeah.
But there were also no breaks in the case in this time. And the story kind of just slipped from the headlines. And once again, the Golden Bar was in full swing. Mm-hmm. Chock full of rail workers, drunks, sex workers, the usual variety of local color. And on April 29th, 1990, 46-year-old Carol Dowd was found dead in an alley behind Newman's Fish Market on Frankfort Avenue. A lot of fish shops in this area. Not sure why that is, but it's even called Fishtown.
They're right by a river. Maybe that's it. I don't know if they caught anything out of that river.
Because like that to do with it.
It was probably a pretty stanky river. Actually, this river separates Pennsylvania at this particular place from New Jersey. So Frankfort is actually just right across the river from Jersey, just a stone's throw away, literally.
Carol Dowd was found dead in an alley behind Newman's Fish Market. She'd been stabbed 36 times. Her left nipple was nearly severed in an act that actually seemed intentional and not incidental. I think he had done this on purpose and done it with some care. Her stomach had been cut open in one large, long slash, her organs plainly visible.
So some deliberate mutilation going on here.
Yeah, we were getting into some real Jack the Ripper territory with this one.
This is, actually, if this guy had been smart enough to write some cryptic letters to the police like old Jack did, he would be... He would be in the history books as, one of the all-time, serial killers.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the difference. It's like, that's the big difference. Because this guy is, as far as I can see, he had more victims than Jack.
Uh-huh.
And the crimes were every bit as depraved as Jack the Ripper. But,
this guy makes the Zodiac look like Mickey Mouse.
Oh, hell yeah. Makes him look like a Boy Scout. Yeah, I know.
Joe, I wanted to read a book about this guy before I did the podcast. So for all you true crime authors out there, there's no book.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's good. And the difference is, again, it's publicity. I mean, the guy didn't, he should have written those letters, That's the key. If you want to have true, infamy and true immortality, you got to write those cryptic letters, dudes. Just a little advice to you.
Advice to would-be serial killers.
That's probably a good point. Yeah. Okay. Forget what I just said. Yeah.
So on the night that Carol was killed, she was at the Goldie. And like several other of the victims, Carol had a history of mental illness. I did not find it directly written that she was an alcoholic, but I think a lot of the people who drank at the Golden Bar were. In her 20s, she'd been diagnosed with schizophrenia and was not taking her medication at the time that she was killed, and she wasn't receiving any treatment of any kind. A witness phoned the task force and told them that they saw Dowd on the night that she died, not far from the alley where she was found. And the witness said that Dowd was talking to a white man, glasses, who walked with a limp.
Although at this time they had the sketch and the description of the guy out there in public, correct?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so somebody calls in, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So but the police soon had a suspect in Carol Dowd's murder. They got this guy, and that's right, it's 38-year-old Leonard Christopher, and he did not match the description of the man seen with the victims. The guy that looks like George from Seinfeld. He did not match that at all.
Not even close.
Nope. Leonard was black, for one thing. Also taller and less round. Did not wear glasses. Notably younger than the guy who had been described by the witnesses. But he did walk with a limp. So the police looked at each other and says, well, that's good enough for me. I guess. Okay, dudes. He worked at the fish market where Dow's body was found, right down the street from the Golden Bar. Yeah. He'd worked there his entire adult life. He was known to be a reliable, hardworking employee who actually outproduced and outpaced his coworkers despite having a bum leg. Yeah. He did not have a criminal record, not a single arrest or even a citation. But he was questioned by the police, and he did mention that he knew Margaret Vaughn, who was the fifth victim of the slasher. And then when they asked him what he was doing on the night that Carol Dowd was murdered, he said that he had spent the night with his girlfriend. But when police talked to the girlfriend, she did not corroborate the alibi. Unfortunately for Leonard.
Ooh, that's not looking good for him.
No, not at all. Yeah.
The cops canvassed Frankfort, and they found a witness who said he saw Leonard at the same bar where Dowd had been drinking. They also talked to a prostitute who was a heroin addict And this woman previously told the task force that she did not see Dowd on the night that she was killed. But when they detained her at the station for a custodial interview, she changed her story and changed it up so that she said that she saw her talking to Leonard Christopher. Nothing fishy about that one.
At this point, I really don't understand why the police even keyed in on him as a suspect at all.
I don't know.
I really don't get it. He had a limp.
He worked where her body was found. They probably
I guess.
Workers there.
I guess. I mean, yeah, I don't really understand.
I don't have an answer for you, Joe.
Maybe they got a great match. Maybe they got an anonymous tip or something, but yeah, it's not a great match at all. You know, let's see. What other evidence did they come up with? Of course, by this time, they're super suspicious. They search his apartment. They found some bloody clothes. Mm-hmm. And they claim that under questioning, and this is why all these interrogations need to be, if not videotaped, at least tape recorded, you know, so you have audio. Because there have been some questionable so-called confessions that really, but there was no tape recording of it. So, and this is one of those, I think.
Yeah.
They say that under questioning, Christopher stated that his clothes got bloody when he cleaned up the blood from Dowd's murder. But he didn't confess to actually murdering or just cleaning it up.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense because our killer never actually cleaned up any of his crime scenes, as far as I know, including Dowd's crime scene.
No one cleaned up the Dowd crime scene.
Yeah, and so Leonard Christopher later denied ever making this statement, which does seem reasonable to me because it's kind of a bizarre thing to say.
I could see him maybe saying something weird like that if they were just sweating him, keeping him awake.
Well, it's not actually been unheard of that police, some cop will go into an interrogation room with a suspect and then come out 20 minutes later with a signed confession.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it turns out that this person never confessed to anything, but the cop just made it up. I'm not saying this happens regularly, but it has happened. And so that might be the case in this. This is, again, why I think all these interrogations need to be videotaped.
Yeah.
So we can see what they actually.
They did have video cameras. They did exist.
Well, I mean, tape recorders were ubiquitous. You could easily tape that stuff. So, yeah. I mean, yeah. So I don't know if Leonard ever made this statement or not.
Hard to say. If he did, I don't know what it proves. That was kind of what I was driving at in the script is like, nobody cleaned up the crime scene. I guess if he did really say that, then he puts himself there at the crime scene.
Well, exactly. Why would he say something like that? Why would he say, oh, I cleaned up the blood at the crime scene? That's incriminating. And unless this guy had a 70 IQ or something, I can't see how he would have thought that this was somehow a good thing, a smart thing to say.
It's hard to say. He was questioned without a lawyer. I have no idea what happened in that room.
Yeah. Yeah, so I really I don't get it. And as far as the bloody clothes that they found in his apartment, I don't know if there was any testing ever done on that stuff. The results were not released to the press. As far as I know, they were not used at his trial. No. So the bloody clothes, I mean, the guy worked at the guy works at a fish market. I mean, it could have just been like, you know, fish guts on his clothes, maybe.
Could have been, how bloody were the clothes? There's no photos that I'm aware of that have ever been publicly released that you can get your hands on. Were they just soaked in blood like he'd committed a murder, or did he get a bloody nose one day or cut himself at the fish market?
Yeah, that's again, in the job, I don't know what he was doing in that job but he might have actually cut himself on a fairly regular basis if he's working with a knife and gutting fish or something like that.
I have a suspicion, and it is only a suspicion, that they did test the clothes and that
they found nothing.
First blood.
that's also possible.
Blood. And that's why it wasn't used in trial, because if they had Dowd's blood on his clothes, that would have been in trial. Why would you not have that at the trial? That is a slam dunk case.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's my suspicion.
Yeah. No, I think you are correct. Yeah. But what other evidence did they have? Okay. At the trial, Christopher's boss said that he was acting nervous after the murder. So, okay, there you go. It's a slam dunk, I guess. He also said that Christopher said to him, quote, maybe I killed her, unquote. And then immediately after that blurted out, no, I didn't, unquote. What the hell? I mean, this is definitely hearsay, I think, right?
It's definitely hearsay. And it's also like, what does that even mean? I don't know. You know, I mean, yeah, that could be, I don't think that's, you know, damning testimony right there.
No, I don't think it is either. That's just, this whole thing is just, I don't know. I can't quite see, if I was on the jury voting to convict this guy based on this evidence, but apparently, but on the other hand,
well, let's hold on.
Yeah.
Okay. That's going to do it for us just for today. We're going to be back really soon with part two, and I don't want to spoil anything, but we've kind of stuck to the true crimey aspect of this. Things are about to get crazy now that poor Leonard is in jail. There's more murders to come. There's another suspect. Everything is about to go off the rails and lead us up to the real heart of this mystery, which continues, honestly, even now. It's never been solved in any way, so definitely check out part two. Thanks for sticking with it. You guys are the best.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.